From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on January 7th when a woman named Linda Torres Rodriguez and her neighbors hunkered down in an auditorium, a refuge during a series of earthquakes that had shaken Puerto Rico throughout the month. The earthquake that day registered 6.4 magnitude. It destroyed homes, caused a blackout across the entire island. Torres had abandoned her house, hoping the auditorium would be more safe and reliable as the aftershocks hit. But as the New York Times reported, that structure made ominous cracking sounds that pushed Torres and her neighbors outside to beach chairs or their cars. Torres told the Times, quote, "This is scarier than the water that Maria brought," end quote. In the 2 years since Hurricane Maria, Puerto Ricans on the island say concerns about infrastructure, a lack of or insufficient government response, and continuing natural disasters have left them feeling unprepared and abandoned. Some have reported they are reliving what happened after Hurricane Maria. But they are also quick to say that Puerto Ricans are resilient. While many are remaining on the island, some have traveled to the mainland seeking safety and new beginnings, a feat in itself, considering the lack of opportunity to travel and some of the conditions. And dozens of families have arrived in Rochester this month and sought out services at Ibero American Action League. The staff there reports that the new arrivals are struggling with the trauma they've experienced, but the greater Rochester community is stepping in to help. This hour, our guests help us understand the current situation in Puerto Rico, and we'll discuss local efforts aimed at providing relief for families both on the island and those who have traveled to the mainland, including the thousands who have come to Rochester since Hurricane Maria. I would like to welcome our guests now, and with us in studio, hello to Miguel Melendez, who's Chief Community Engagement Officer for Ibero American Action League. Welcome, Miguel. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us from Ibero is their Director of Stability, Education, and Employment Services. It's Glory Harris. Welcome, Glory. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Jeremias Manero is here, a volunteer with Ibero and also a founding member of Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, Puerto Ricans United in the Distance. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And with us on the line is, and I want to make sure I've got to, it's Rosemary Villarubia Izzo, who's a Rochesterian who lives part-time in Puerto Rico. And I'm taking a look at some of the notes on where you are now, Rosemary. I'm reading that you're in Mayagüez, the east coast, about 30 miles from the epicenter of the Guanica area. And I know you were there for the first quake. How are you doing, Rosemary?
I'm good. It's been very stressful and it's very nerve-wracking. But everybody is down here just experiencing them on a daily basis.
So tell us where you really have spent most of this month and what it has been like for you there.
So, actually, I've been down here since Thanksgiving, and the first one that hit, you're not going to believe it, but it was the first one that was a 6.0, and my doors in my bedroom started shaking really, really hard, and they're glass doors, big closet, and I swear I had never experienced an earthquake, and my house wasn't shaking, it was just the doors, all the glass and stuff, and I thought it was a large iguana had gotten into my house, and it was in the closet trying to get out. And all of a sudden, I started receiving phone calls from my cousins that lived next to me saying tsunami warning and for me to head up to the hill because I'm right by the water. So that's how I found out it was an earthquake and not an iguana in my house. The next one was the 6.5. The largest one that's hit the island, and it was in the morning hours the next day, and that one shook my house, my walls, my concrete home. I thought the blasts from the ceiling were going to cave onto me, my bed, because it was just shaking uncontrollable, and then it was just plain fear after that.
Now, after the 6.5, USA Today reports there have been several strong aftershocks even still. So, yeah. You know, a 5.0, I think a 5.9. What has it been like after the biggest one?
A couple hours after the 6.5, there was another 6.0, and that shook the house the same way as the 6.5. It's been very nerve-wracking because you feel them, even the 5s and 4.3s. You're feeling them because it's the shaking that you feel on the ground. The hardest thing is The people that are living near the epicenter, houses have crumbled. I have many, many pictures of their homes on my Facebook account, and I have shared it with the DNC. It's just very sad to see the people. They're very fearful for their lives because they don't know the foundations of the houses. The walls are a lot of cracking, and what you see today that looks cracked and it looks like it's going to cave, within a few other earthquakes, it keeps bringing them down. So you see more and more houses going down. And outside of the epicenter, a lot of the other towns have been affected because of the shaking, including my parents who are an hour away. They had no power for over a week, no electricity. And at 86 and 82 years old, people, the elderly, they need electricity, especially like my mom with an oxygen tank. So it is really beyond what you see, just the people that have lost their houses and are sleeping in parking lots under tents and tarps. There's just so much more going on.
And then on the other end of the age spectrum, you think about kids. USA Today reporting that the largest quake essentially flattened the top two floors of a three-story school in Guanica on January 7th, just 2 days before classes were scheduled to resume after break. And let me also read from USA Today. Puerto Rico opened only 20% of its public schools on Tuesday following a strong earthquake that delayed the start of classes by nearly 3 weeks as fears linger over the safety for students. Overall, engineers have now inspected 561 of the island's 856 public schools, finding at least 52 unsafe to reopen, leaving some 240,000 students out of school for now. Ongoing tremors also are forcing crews to automatically re-inspect schools following any quake of 3.0 magnitude or higher, according to Puerto Rico's Infrastructure Financing Authority. So a very unstable situation. And Rosemary, give me a sense for what it is now like, given all of not only the biggest one of 6.5, but all of these sort of large and small aftershocks. Do you feel like every time you hear a rumble on the street, you feel like you're getting ready for another one? I mean, is everyone sort of on edge?
That is exactly what the people that are living in Guayanilla, Guanica, and Yauco, the three most affected towns, are feeling, like in total fear. Everyone understands that there's an expectation that there's a bigger one to come, because in the last month there's been over 1,000 quakes reported. It's a very difficult situation with the children. I'm part of the American Red Cross. I've been with them 36 years out of the Rochester chapter, and I've been going to the towns down here and working and dealing with the people. And I can tell you that I interviewed one child that I asked him how safe he felt in his home, and he said he didn't feel safe at all because the house was wrecked and it had started to crumble. And I asked him how safe did he feel sleeping in underneath a tarp in a parking lot, a dirt parking lot, where there's nothing there except one meal a day. And he said 100% safe. So even the children understand what fear is. And even the children are really a nervous wreck.
Is there also a sense, Rosemary, on the island of shock, fatigue of having to deal with natural disaster? I mean, we are still dealing with the after effects of the hurricane and the infrastructure problems. What is the mindset, not just sort of in the last several weeks, but on top of everything that came before these earthquakes?
There's a lot of sad individuals, and it's hard because recently the governor on the island said that the people in the tent cities, in the military tent cities shelters, were heavy people. And my experience walking through them and taking part of it and visiting so many of the tent cities and the just plain empty lots, that's not the feeling that people are feeling. They're just feeling like they're at a loss. Like they're not sure, when am I going to get back home? What is going to be home? When are the streets going to be open for us to go into them? For instance, town of Guanica is one that has no power and no water, and 100% of the people are pretty much living out of their houses. there was heavy rains this week, 2 days straight, and there was some flooding. And I went into one of the tent cities that I had been working with family, and I asked, I was looking, where are they? Where are they? Well, during the flooding, they actually picked them up and went somewhere else. And I said, why aren't they taking anybody else in to this tent city? Because there's so much room. Actually, they're trying to move the people to a higher shelter. And so where you find some people, when you go back, they're not there. They have been moved somewhere else. There's a lot of emotional help coming in. Social workers like Glory, you know, from my barrel who you have there. People that have a field in social work and psychology are coming in and volunteering and coming into the tent cities and working with the people. And that is definitely something that's needed.
So before I turn our attention to some of our guests in studio, I want to ask you a little bit more about the people, as you say, in Guanica, but also elsewhere, who are now living out of their own homes, at least temporarily. People, you know, human beings have a lot of pride in where they grow up and where they live. It is a truism everywhere you look. Certainly true in Puerto Rico. You have pride in Puerto Rico, pride in your town, pride in the island. You can understand why some Puerto Ricans have moved to Rochester or other places in the United States after Hurricane Maria. But surely there were some who said, I'm going to rebuild after Maria. I'm not going to let this affect where I'm going to live. And now you get the blow of this series of earthquakes. And it must be devastating.
You're 100% right.
Yeah. It must be devastating.
You're 100% right. The people of Puerto Rico have such pride and love their land. They love the people here that they live with, the families, the neighbors, their friends, all become one. It's one family. And it's about the pride. And it's like, we know this is very strong and this is very difficult, but we will survive this. Just let us know when we can actually start building our lives again. And the only thing that's holding them back, of course, is that the continuous shakes. On Sunday, I went with a group of over 100 volunteers through three towns. And one of the things that everybody was, when you ask everybody, is what your plans are you going to leave? And they're all about staying here. It's just that they need to know when it's okay and safe for them to be able to go back home.
And so I'll ask you, and then I'll ask in studio what our guests here are hearing, particularly because, look, if there are families, if there are individuals from Puerto Rico who are going to leave the island, no one can blame them at this point. They may not have an option. For those who do, they're going to want to stay there. What do they need most for the people who are staying there, the vast majority of Puerto Ricans, Rosemary? What are the biggest needs right now?
The biggest needs. I think the biggest need is honestly safe shelter, not in a parking lot where there's tents and tarps and people coming maybe once a day to bring some food, or the military tents where they do get three meals, but they're sleeping in a tent, a party tent that sits and sleeps about 40 people, and they just don't feel that safe. It's a safe shelter. So I right now, funding for proper housing, many have lost everything. Many of the people of the island do not have insurance. That's not a requirement, especially if your house is paid for. So there's going to be some financial support needed for the people who have lost absolutely everything. I have a friend who lives in Guanica from Rochester, and on the 4th, she will be returning back to Rochester. She retired down here, but now she's returning back to Rochester. And her home in Guanica, she lost everything. The few things that she could take are in boxes, and it's what she's taking back. So it's about helping them financially rebuild.
Well, we're talking to Rosemary, Rosemary Izzo, who's a Rochesterian who lives part-time in Puerto Rico and has been down there since Thanksgiving, and of course has been there experiencing the earthquakes, the series of quakes and aftershocks that have rocked the island. And so we're talking about the need there and also what's happening here in our own community. So let me turn our attention right here in studio, and I'll turn to first to Miguel Melendez, who is the Chief Community Engagement Officer for Ibero-American Action League. This is a community that already has a strong presence of Puerto Ricans, and even before these earthquakes, certainly. Fair to say?
Absolutely.
Hundreds of families. I don't know. Do we know exactly roughly how many?
You know? Yeah, from Hurricane Maria, we had about 4,500 families that came, or people that came to Rochester to relocate. And actually, we're learning now that from the quakes, at least those that have walked through Ibero's doors, we have about 56 new arrivals, new households that have arrived here since the quakes have started.
And so for those who are showing up in Rochester now, what are the biggest needs that you are seeing? I mean, are most showing up here without much of anything? I mean, do the needs vary?
The needs do vary. I mean, there are some family connections here in Rochester, which does help some families that are coming. But obviously, housing becomes one of the major needs upon arriving here in Rochester. After that, the whole process of resettling, I mean, finding a job, finding stability in their lives once they arrive here is a challenge. So Ibero's here to respond to that need and do our best to position people for success once they arrive to Rochester. And we do have a case management staff that is prepared to help people with relocation and figuring out the basic needs upon arrival.
And so Glory's title is Director of Stability, Education, and Employment Services. I mean, just being the Director of Stability Services, what does that word mean in the context of your work?
So in the context of my work, it's just building those partnerships to be able to refer clients to the variety of different needs that they may have. Going back to what you mentioned, primarily what we're seeing is families that have children that are relocating to Rochester. So right now we're in the process of reconnecting with those who were part of the MARC, the
Multi-Agency Resource Center.
So I think that a lot of families are coming to Ibero because of the support we provided after the hurricane. So they're kind of just coming back to us with the same needs that we experienced back when the hurricane happened.
And so Ibero partnering with Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia for an effort. What do you want the community to know?
Well, as far as Ibero, we do have 4 case managers specific to those new arrivals from Puerto Rico. We have a variety of services available to them. Primarily, we just want to provide them with the advocacy and support just to be able to feel safe here, feel like they have a connection here so they're not just going and being left in the middle of nowhere. So we're kind of that just support group, that hub of resources in the community. To help them.
Miguel, tell us again how many families we've seen so far post or at least since the earthquake started here.
Yeah, so that have walked through Ibero's front doors, 56 different families.
Already. And you expect more?
We do expect more, and we anticipate that, the MARC model, which we activated after the hurricane, might be a model that we have to go back to have a one-stop shop for services for new arrivals here in Rochester.
Jeremias, as not only a volunteer with Ibero, but also a founding member of Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia, tell us about what the organization is that you're a founding member of, and then we'll talk about some of the work you're doing now.
So the organization was founded during Hurricane Maria, just a group of like-minded individuals who cared about Puerto Rico, wanted to make a difference, and wanted to coordinate some fundraising efforts here in the Rochester, New York area. So that's what we did during Hurricane Maria. We started with a fundraiser on 10 days' notice. You know, we filled a couple U-Haul trucks worth of stuff, raised a bunch of money, and then after the fact, helping to coordinate efforts in partnership with Ibero and everybody that we could, volunteers, you know, just getting people back on track is what we did. And then we kind of lay dormant until, you know, the earthquake hit and we all kind of got to, you know, let's reactivate, you know, superheroes reactivate kind of a thing.
And so is it sort of surreal to have to kind of go back right into this right now?
It is, and I mean, the one good thing I could say that it's the heart of the people right here in Rochester that, I mean, we just had a fundraiser this past Friday. It was highly successful, multiple agencies working together, again, on like a 2 weeks notice, something that would take months to put together, typically everybody just working together, again, for a common cause.
If people are listening to this at this moment thinking, what can I do? And sometimes that means volunteering, and sometimes that means just writing a check. For those who want to do that, what would you direct them to do?
So you can go right to our website. It's purunidos.org. We've partnered a fiscal sponsorship with Ibero. So it's 501c3 certified when they make that donation. And if they just want to volunteer, there's opportunities for that. As far as, you know, maybe you don't have the money, but you have the time. And we always need more people to help.
purunidos.org.
Correct.
That's UNIDOS, purunidos.org, for information on how you can help, whether it is with funds, if that's what you want to do, listeners, or if you want to inquire about getting in touch, helping out, volunteering, etc., for the need here. Because we do expect, as Miguel said, the need will probably grow. Look, I'm not an expert at all. Let me bring Rosemary back in to the conversation, who's on the line with us. I think she's relocating. So we're going to get Rosemary back in the line in just a second, because she's joining us from Puerto Rico, and she's relocating, and we'll make sure that we've got her in a safe location, of course. But I don't know, and I'll ask our guests in studio. This is not my expertise. I think I was probably like a lot of people when I heard earthquake. You know, frankly, what do people think of first? Well, probably California, probably the American West, Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Is there been a history, and was this a surprise, or was this expected in any way?
Very much a surprise. Probably 100 years ago or so, there's documentation that there were quakes near the island, but this is really an unexpected event, and to have so many in such a short period of time, I think is really the kicker. We're talking about 1,000 quakes and aftershocks in a very short period of time. So no one, I think, expected this to be what we're dealing with.
Okay, Gloria?
And prior to this, we were actually getting ready to case manage individuals back to Puerto Rico. So this was definitely a big hit to us to kind of have to shift our vision again, because a lot of them don't want to go back now. And like you said, we can't blame them. So it's a scary thing for them. And, you know, I think that prior to the quakes that they were very hopeful and that they can return. But I think at this point that has changed drastically.
I want to sort of make sure I understand exactly what you're describing here. So you had families that you were managing in preparation of returning to Puerto Rico who had come, what, post-Maria?
Yes.
Again, just for the numbers for listeners, this month alone, 56 new families from Puerto Rico since the earthquake started. Mm-hmm. But it was, what, 4,500 or so, Miguel?
Yes.
Yeah. Post-Maria. So we're talking thousands of people have been here in just the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any sense for how many you've been working with who want to return to Puerto Rico?
Very little at this point.
But before the earthquakes?
I don't have a set number, but I think it was a good amount of individuals who were ready to kind of rebuild and, you know, start over because they gained that hope here. Mm-hmm. So, but now it's completely different now.
Wow. And Miguel, I think that's important too, because this is a community that, number one, it's strong, it's vibrant, it's a wonderful Puerto Rican community. It's a supportive community for, we hope, for people in need, yeah. No matter where they're coming from. But sometimes when you have disruption, as we saw post-hurricane, families, individuals will move permanently. And some will say, we need to catch our breath and get our feet on the ground and then ideally return. Did you have a sense for how many out of those 4,500 post-Maria you thought would stay in Rochester permanently?
Well, I think some people definitely rooted here.
Probably the majority?
If majority means 51%, probably the majority.
Around half, though, maybe.
I would say that there was a good number of people that really were interested in finding a way back to the island.
That doesn't mean that they're ready today or tomorrow or next week,
right.
But working in that direction.
Yes.
And it does sound now like, Lori, a lot of that group, and we're talking a couple thousand families, maybe reconsidering that.
Yeah. And the real reason is the snow. Honestly, a lot of them didn't really catch on to the snow and the weather. So if they were going back to nothing but warmth, then I think that they were hopeful for just that. So
we're trying to have one little moment of levity. The conversation, frankly, no one wants to have. But for Puerto Ricans living in Rochester, The snow is not like Rochesterians who grew up here.
No. Some of them like it. You know, they actually enjoyed, especially those with young children who like the snow and were,
come on, they like,
you know,
it for like 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they go, okay, I'm over it. I'm over
it. I'd like to go back to something Rosemary said, which
please.
Is, you know, the pride on the island is something very, very different than, I mean, everyone, like you mentioned on the top of the hour, that people really have a pride in where they live, but for Puerto Ricans, it's a really a strong value to them. And so just looking at from that perspective, I think that's one of the main drivers of people wanting to go back to where home is.
Well, so before we take our only break of the hour, I want to remind you why we're here. I mean, certainly you've heard in the last several weeks in the news of earthquakes and aftershocks rocking the island of Puerto Rico. Obviously, a place that has been trying to rebuild post-Maria, building back the infrastructure, rebuilding schools, and simply trying to create sort of everything from a power grid to the kind of infrastructure where you can get day-to-day and week-to-week life back to some semblance of normal. And now you have this, and it has been devastating. And so we're talking about what's happening there, but what's also happening here in Rochester. You just heard Miguel Melendez, who's Chief Community Engagement Officer for Ibero-American Action League. And we also have Glory Harris, who's Director of Stability, Education, and Employment Services at Ibero. Jeremias Monero is here, working with as a founding member of Puerto Riqueños Unidos en la Distancia. And on the line with us is Rosemary Izzo, who's a Rochesterian who lives part-time in Puerto Rico, and she's there, and she has been there since November. She's been there throughout and has experienced these earthquakes. And we're going to talk more about the experience of living through that and what comes next after our only break of the hour. Coming up in our second hour on WXXI, live coverage of the Senate impeachment trial. On WRUR, Live Connections, a new conversation about the plastic bag ban at Wegmans. What do you think about the ban that just took effect a couple of days ago? Well, yesterday, I guess. It's in effect now. We'll talk about the rules, the changes, why it's happening, and changing our behavior. Next hour on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, talking about events in Puerto Rico and dealing with the earthquakes there. Rosemary Izzo is back on the line with us from Puerto Rico. And Rosemary, can you do a little bit of geography for us? We've been talking about Guanica. Most Americans, if they can do much geography, if they're not from Puerto Rico, and if they don't have family in Puerto Rico, they may know San Juan. But where is Guanica? Kind of give us, set the scene for us a little bit.
That is completely at the other opposite end of the island on the east coast, and it's the southern point on the east. So it's very desert-like area. The geography is our desert forest that the U.S. Forestry has is Guanica. Guanica is known for the desert forest with large cactuses, very dry land. So you would think that it'd be safe, but when granite breaks, it splits in the middle, and that is the kind of landscaping that is in Guanica. Many of the houses are built in concrete, and the town sits really low, almost sea level. So it's also very nerve-wracking for those that are near the water because of the tsunami and the earthquake shaking. That part of the island has been the epicenter where the majority of over 1,000 have taken place. Ponce has received some Peñuelas, which is all within, if you point and look at Guanica on your lowest part of the island, southeast, very much at the southern east coast of the island, and you look 30 minutes to each side, that's where all the other shakes have taken place. So it's aligned right through the Guanica area and out.
And during our brief break, our guests in studio, and they'll talk about this in a moment, we're talking about where the money raised for various causes are going to go. This is always important when anyone is considering giving to a cause. There are questions about how that's allocated, et cetera. Before we talk to them about where that's going, I want to ask you, Rosemary, if you think Puerto Ricans living on the island trust government in general to do a good job in repair work, timely response, and do they trust aid organizations after Maria?
what I'm seeing and the experience that I have been having and working with a lot of different organizations right now, the last month down here, and as a member of the Red Cross, I can tell you that they trust more organizations than they do the government. Unfortunately, that's reality. You see the organizations taking the monies, buying the supplies, coming in trucks and school buses, and just coming into a parking lot where there's people and bringing cases of water, bringing food, bringing diapers for the elderly, for the kids, you know, what's needed. We had Mercedes Cynthia Wanda down here who from Rochester Contingency who came this week. And I have to tell you, one of the things that I was pulling out of Mercedes' car that she rented had boxes of off mosquito repellent. And seeing that there's rain and the fact that there's mosquitoes coming, it becomes a dangerous thing. So the organizations and the people that are actually delivering the stuff, it means a lot to the people. Politics is politics, and there's a lot of red tape, and there's a lot about, well, we have to check the structure of the house, we have to send an architect from FEMA to look at things, and it's a process that takes forever. I experienced that with my parents firsthand when Maria hit. My mom's 86, as I said, she was 84 back then, and looking at everything, and my father came home with some paperwork and wanted the deed of the house, of his house, and I'm like, why would FEMA need your deed? They're elderly. They're living off of Social Security. And guess what? What he thought was being given to him was a loan from FEMA. And the paperwork and the reason they needed the deed was because it would be a lien on their house. And I said, absolutely not. To give you a few thousand dollars to repair what was broken, they're going to put a lien on your house. And no, absolutely not. So the politics and the red tape is what people don't trust.
So, once again, listeners, if you want to help with campaigns that are happening here in Rochester, we're going to tell you exactly where that money is going and how it's going to happen in a moment here. But there's a couple places to go. We mentioned we've got guests from Ibero-American Action League. It's Ibero, you may pronounce it Ibero, I-B-E-R-O.org, Ibero.org, or Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia. It's P-U-R Unidos.org. There are links to the campaign on the main pages. You will find the information there. And let me ask both. I'll start with Jeremias from Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia. So if people want to give, how does that money actually aid people in need?
Well, very different than Hurricane Maria, we're trying to partner with not-for-profits with feet on the ground in Puerto Rico, right? When we were, you know, making collection points for Hurricane Maria, the governor had set up distribution points and they could ship that. And now it's very different. We don't have that in place. And so we're trying to fundraise, get the money, and then donate it to a not-for-profit in Puerto Rico so that they can buy the supplies so that it helps the Puerto Rican economy and then also make a difference with feet on the ground.
Do me a favor, Jeremiah, swing that microphone between us because I want to make sure everybody hears your message.
Okay.
That's even better. Good.
Okay.
Okay, so that's one way of looking at it. What did you learn from the experience after Maria for what people expect and what's sort of an efficient way of doing this?
Well, what we did learn, and like you said, a lot of people trust organizations over the government, and just being transparent in everything that we're doing and letting people know exactly where the money's going, who it's helping. It's 501c3. They're not for profits. It's not somebody who's going to take the money, skim something. You know, it's going to the people that need it in the places that need it the most.
Okay. Miguel, you want to add to, if you get on Ibero.org, where the money goes and why it's going that way?
Yeah, so Ibero is very intentional this time. You learned a lot from the Hurricane Maria efforts, and what we really want to be is a catalyst and a convener to ensuring that the support is reaching the people on the ground. And so that is part of the reason we've partnered with United in the Distance here to really look at how we can get resources directly on the ground. The other thing we've supported and we will continue to support is efforts of the American Red Cross. We did a telethon a few weeks ago to raise funds for the Red Cross. So I would encourage you, if you're not interested in volunteering for an effort, to at least consider either donating to the Red Cross or on Ibero.org, supporting this effort on the ground in Puerto Rico.
Okay. You're pretty confident now that what you've learned, especially post-Maria, is not only going to guide the work, but will help the public feel comfortable knowing that their contributions are going to be going in a direction that's the most efficient to help people.
I strongly believe that. And I think one of the reasons, and I can point to a news article recently about a warehouse in Ponce that had items from Hurricane Maria still in storage, water, you name it, full.
Yeah.
And these are things that could have been passed out in the last couple of years, let alone while the quakes were happening. So we know that there's a challenge on the ground to coordinate these efforts. And we want to work with the people who are most connected to the grassroots and can really get this to people who need things.
Let me read a little bit about a concern that listeners may have about sort of the post-damage, the Maria damage, and now what's happening with the earthquakes. Reading from the New York Times, we're talking about the infrastructure and electrical system. The New York Times writes, after spending $3.2 billion erecting some 52,000 new electrical poles and stringing 6,000 miles of wire from the federal government alone, the Puerto Rico electricity system was left in not much better condition than it was before Maria cut power to every home and business on the island. The former Federal Emergency Management Agency official in charge of the process was arrested in September, accused of steering work to one of the contractors with whom she was involved in a romantic relationship. And USA Today reports that overall, experts say some 500 public schools in Puerto Rico were built before 1987 and don't meet new construction codes. A plan to retrofit all schools that need it, an estimated 756 buildings, would cost around $2.5 billion, officials have said, noting those are preliminary figures. How much are you hearing, and I'll ask all of our guests in studio, that the earthquakes could endanger some of that work, whether it's electrical grid, schools we've already talked a little bit about, other infrastructure? What are we hearing? Concerns? Miguel, you want to start?
Yeah, I can lead us off. I think that the major concerns is that we keep investing in infrastructure that may not be the right infrastructure for the island. You know, there was talk at one point, should some of this stuff be underground? But now with the quakes, I don't know if that's the right answer. So I think there needs to be a hard look at infrastructure from a long-term standpoint and finding what's right for the island and not just putting a Band-Aid over what's currently there. So I would say that that's a big need. The other thing I would say is there really needs to be an effort to coordinate. Here in the United States, the federal government needs to really look at what supports and what are the best ways that this government can support the island of Puerto Rico. We're not second-rate citizens, and we need support on the ground.
Okay. Glory?
Well, as I mentioned, the primary concern for our families that we're seeing come through our doors is the schools. A lot of them are just really concerned that, you know, their kids aren't able to get that education, continue on, especially for those who were in high school, you know, ready to graduate, ready to go to college. It's a real big setback for them to have to kind of start over in some cases.
Okay. Jeremias, what concerns you the most in terms of long-term damage and rebuild there?
Well, I think the major concern being having a real estate background is so many families that don't have insurance that really can't afford to repair or even know how to repair or be able to hire an engineer to tell them how to repair it. Like, all of those are concerns, because if you don't feel like home is home, is safe, you're not going back, you know? And then, like when you said about the pride in where you live, I have family members who born there, worked here their whole lives to retire back there again, and they don't want to come back. They worked 30 years here in Rochester. The winters are enough. They want to, you know, retire in their country. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges, not knowing, not being able to, or having the knowledge to repair your property in a safe and secure manner.
We heard from Rosemary earlier this hour. What did you all hear about some of the stories you were hearing about when the earthquakes were happening? It had to be surreal for you as well, even though here we are in Rochester. Jeremiah, what were you hearing?
Very much the same, nerve-wracking. You know, it'd be different if it was one earthquake happened one time, but it's like, when is the next one happening? And I think, you know, the mental health side of it is something that we're kind of working on to help the displaced families that are coming here, because, you know, you have this trauma from Hurricane Maria, which they may have buried right? And now it's brought back up again with earthquake after earthquake. You know, something has to be done to help those families.
Gloria, what did you hear?
The same. Just the trauma, just heartbreaking to know that families were still getting over the hurricane, the trauma from that, and now going through this, whether they're here or no, or still have family there, or those that relocated coming back and saying, you know, hey, you helped me for Hurricane Maria, but now I'm back. So just heartbreaking.
Miguel?
Yeah, I think the images of what's going on the island have been a trigger for people locally here in Rochester.
100%.
You know, my family in Puerto Rico, they are in the center of the island. You know, they've told me that they're fine, they're okay, they're just scared because they don't know when the next quake is going to hit. They don't know if it's going to get bigger than what it is right now. And they're in the mountains and on unstable ground. So they don't know. I think the calling on the island is people just don't know.
We're going to close the hour in just a moment. We've been talking a lot about what's not only happened on the island, but also to families who intend eventually, if they can, to move back there. Now, there are hundreds of families who are living in Rochester and probably will potentially for the rest of their lives, if not generations here. I mean, we have a vibrant community. They have set up a life here post-Maria and 56 families since the earthquakes. But one more question for Miguel, because you raised, an important question, which is that since Maria, there's this idea of, well, if we're going to rebuild an infrastructure, do we do power lines underground? Is there a different way to do it, particularly in the light of climate change, knowing that as an island, you're going to be vulnerable to probably more volatile and increased number of storms? And now, of course, the earthquakes have you rethinking that, and I understand that. But in the light of climate change, does it make the process of rebuilding more difficult? I mean, I have a brother who lives in Florida, and just visiting there, looking at the way some of the materials that are being used to build anything that has gotten knocked down, it is more expensive to sort of build something that's going to withstand the possible worst effect of climate change. But if you build back cheaply, if the government does it cheaply, if people can't afford it, you can be in real trouble too. What do you do with that?
I think that's the question of our time on the island of Puerto Rico. It is a major challenge, but I do think that we have to do it right. So we need to really think about what investments need to happen. And rather than investing over and over again in something that's going to fail us, try to do it right the first time. And you know, aside from the earthquakes themselves, which have ravaged some of the concrete structures on the island, Puerto Rico has withstood many storms, many natural disasters because of how sturdy the infrastructure has been traditionally. This is obviously a different animal, but I'm hoping that the earthquakes are an anomaly and that eventually they stop. And we just have to make sure that once that happens, we focus on building with the right materials and doing it right.
Okay, Jeremiah, you want to add to that?
Well, I think to add to the big challenge with Puerto Rico is that it's not flat like Florida, right? I mean, it's so different. You have mountains. You have, if you ever traveled into the mountains, there's some areas where you have to beep before you go around the corner, and there's no guardrail. You know, like it's imagine putting a telephone pole somewhere on there. It's those are the challenges that nobody talks about. That really, when it's redone, it does have to be done right, and there's no way that Puerto Rico can do it themselves, so they definitely need some help from the government.
And now for the families who are going to be here, you know, Glory, as Director of Stability, Education, and Employment Services at Ibero, hundreds of families since Maria, and those numbers being added to since the earthquake started this month in Puerto Rico, how would you say, generally speaking, those families are doing?
Again, just traumatized. Just a lot of mental health support is needed. And as mentioned, that's something that we're working on with different community partners to have that support. But that's just primarily it. Prior to starting, I was sharing that even our case management has changed a bit, allowing more time for appointments because clients are really distraught and kind of just need that just needs to be heard, mm-hmm. to cry in appointments. And so it's been really out of the box of what we normally do. But just, as I mentioned, making sure that they understand that, that we're a family to them. Ibero is here to support them, whether they have family here or not.
How many employers can you think of off the top of your head who you would say they are stepping up, they are hiring, they're working with us? Do you have some in your mind that you would think of?
Yeah, we do have some that we've partnered with. The biggest thing is the language barrier. Mm-hmm. So just working through that. But there are some employers that are willing to give that opportunity.
Do you want to put any heat on the local employment community to do more?
Yes, a little bit more. I wouldn't say that we have, you know, one partner that's for sure going to take our people. But I think that we do need a little more support from employers to just give them a chance. A lot of them are coming with really good backgrounds and skills. They just need the opportunity to attend English classes and work at the same time.
Your co-panelists were nodding, and I don't say this up to stir up any trouble. I'm just trying to be I'm trying to be direct about how our communities. So go ahead, Miguel. The floor is yours. What do you want employers to know?
Well, I think what Glory said is true. There's a lot of skills that are coming in to Rochester. You really need to focus in on that these are families coming and they're hardworking people. Mm-hmm. You know, the language barrier is something we can overcome together. Yeah. And I'm sure most employers do have bilingual staff. So it's just navigating and getting creative on how. But we definitely need support. There's jobs out there. We know there's jobs out there. It's making sure that we're not so rigid in the hiring process to exclude people who can really be good, strong workers.
Yeah.
Okay,
give
go
them
ahead.
I was just saying, just give them a chance.
Yeah.
Right? Take a chance on somebody that's coming in and maybe not, you may not be able to do the extensive background check that you may have done on somebody else you've employed who's a native Rochesterian, but they're coming from Puerto Rico. They had employment there. They had careers. They have skills that they're bringing to the table, and they're bilingual. I mean, they'll learn English, right?
Yeah.
They know Spanish, so that's a benefit to your business.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, the other thing I would add is the emergency housing needs. So if you are a landlord out there who has a home or apartment that's vacant, you know, I think reach out to Glory and let it be known, because those families, those 56 families need a place.
Yeah.
Es mejor tener los dos idiomas in the business, right?
That's right.
Why not? It's a benefit. How would you say, Miguel, generally speaking, the families that have moved here since Maria, with the intention or at least probably the understanding that it will be long term, how do you think they're faring?
I think it's taken some time for them to get on their feet. We still have families that are looking for guidance, assistance. But generally speaking, I think they've been able to integrate well into the community. And part of that, I think, is Ibero's role in trying to help them navigate systems, but then also find the right place in the community to live. We have a lot of communities that are ethnically diverse and inclusive. And, you know, Rochester in general, we have about 75,000 Latinos here in Rochester. So there's the language, the flavor, the culture. So there's some elements of home here.
And there is the food.
Absolutely.
We're grateful as a community for the diversity of the community and for the gifts that are siblings and family members and friends from Puerto Rico are bringing. But as our guests have told you this hour, there's still a lot of need and a lot of challenge. And so as we continue to monitor the events, as we close the hour one more time, I'll ask them to tell you how you can get in touch if you want to help in any way. Miguel Glory from Ibero, you want to let our listeners know how to find you?
Yes, you can find us on ibero.org, or you can stop in if you know someone who needs services at 777 Clifford Avenue. And that's our Stability, Education, and Employment Services Division.
Okay. Go ahead.
And again, that's for like case management, anything regarding donations and things like that should be directed to Puerto Ricos Unidos or our website.
Okay. Ibero.org. And the phone number, by the way, for Ibero?
It's
585-454-1430. 454-1430 for Ibero, Puerto Riqueños Unidos en la Distancia. Go ahead, Jermaris.
purunidos.org. And from there, you can make donations, but also there's a tab for you to, if you're interested in volunteering, you can fill it out and let us know.
a lot of different ways to help as we continue to monitor those events. Jeremias is one of the founding members of Puerto Ricanos Unidos en la Distancia. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having us.
And our thanks to the team from Ibero. Miguel Melendez is Chief Community Engagement Officer for Ibero American Action League. Thank you, Miguel.
Thank you.
And our thanks as well, gracias, Gloria Harris, who's Director of Stability, Education, and Employment Services at Ibero. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
More connections coming up, and we will tell you that as we hit 1 o'clock, NPR live coverage of the employment trial in the U.S. Senate will come your way on WXXI. That's AM 1370 and on the WXXI mobile app. And if you're listening on WRUR, that's 88.5 FM, live connections. If you'd rather have connections, you got two options, and it's both coming your way at 1 o'clock.